Blog Talk Radio.
We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Good evening. It's Wednesday night. It's debate night, and this is Lisa Payne Nager, and Wednesday night is your culture vigilante hour, and we're here tonight with Dave. Good evening, Dave.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I'm always glad to have you on. Always glad to have you here helping me run the boards, because I am technically compromised here many nights. But we're going to get through it tonight. We have a lot of stuff going on here tonight, and I know that everybody's interested in getting to the debate, so we'll run through things pretty quickly. One thing I kind of want to touch on before we hit the ground running, I spent a good part of the afternoon here going through ordinances and bill language and stuff for getting prepared for November, getting prepared for the election in November. And we've talked a lot here on the Culture Vigilante Hour about the question that one of the questions that's going to be on the ballot about electing a sheriff or having an appointed sheriff. In St. Charles County, if you live in St. Charles County, bring your reading glasses to the polls, because you have two pages of ballot stuff to go through. It's a huge, huge, messy, nasty voting process in St. Charles County. There are four questions on the ballot: the sheriff's issue and Proposition A, which is in addition to the state Proposition A, E, and B, and all those things. So there's just a ton of stuff, and I was trying to sort through all of that today, and I had some conversations with some people at the Election Authority and trying to match up things. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail with it tonight, but we will go into detail with it in the next few weeks. What a big damn mess. We've got so much stuff on our ballot, and it has been pushed through so quickly since the middle of August. The county council and the county executive trying to change the charter of the St. Charles County, my head is absolutely spinning. And I do want to go into some detail as time goes by about how this is just wrong, because what's going on is your county charter is very much like your constitution. And we've got four questions on the ballot, a law enforcement question and a proposition, all related to changing the constitution of St. Charles County. And it was all done within the span of a couple of weeks in the county council sessions in St. Charles County. So folks, right off the bat, I'm going to urge you to look into this more deeply before you go to the polls in November, and I'm going to urge you to vote no on every single one of these issues in St. Charles County, and we will talk about these things as time goes by, but I am telling you, the conglomeration of mess, question one in St. Charles County, it encompasses five different issues in the one ballot question. And then you have questions two, three, and four, along with the sheriff's issue and Proposition A. So I'm hoping to be able to have some more people on later on in the coming weeks to talk about these things. But what a big mess. I mean, Dave, do you have anything like that down there in Springfield? Do you have any of these county issues going on down there?
We don't. We have some city stuff coming up, but we actually cleared most of our city stuff back on the primary ballot. We have some gay rights agenda thing coming up, but I think that's all we have locally. I don't think we have anything for the county. So that sounds like a mess up there, though.
Oh, well, you know, and the scary thing about it is, I mean, if people understand, and I don't think people do understand, that when they're trying to change your county charter, that's like trying to change your constitution. I mean, to me, that's just huge. And you know how I feel about that kind of stuff. You don't mess with your constitution unless you've got a really big issue, you know.
Right.
And they've got four questions and two other propositions in addition to that, all changing the Constitution. And what they did here in St. Charles County was they put it all on the ballot within the span of 2 weeks in August. All of this went through like wildfire, and it's just amazing. And most of this, I'm telling you, the Acme crown-making company needs to get ready because their business is about to explode because Steve Ellman's going to be ordering crowns like crazy if these things pass, because he'll be the king of St. Charles County, because the power all shifts to him. People will have all their rights taken away to vote for all kinds of things, and he'll be the king.
I'm guessing none of this then was initiative-driven.
No.
Yeah.
No. And there would have been one other thing on the ballot, except they went to court last week and had it bumped off. They were trying to initiate a countywide smoking ban, and that was going to be on the ballot too.
Yeah, so, I remember some brouhaha about that one, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that these politicians justify this by saying, "Oh, if we put it to a ballot, you know, put it on the ballot and leave it to a vote of the people, then it must be okay. We must be doing our jobs correctly. You know, we must be doing everything we're supposed to be doing it." And it's like, you know, we shouldn't be seeing any of this. So, get ready, folks. It's coming. And what a big darn mess. And we'll have some more from Terry Herring later on in the program about the Save Our Sheriff campaign and some action items that you can get to. But I know that we've got a lot of stuff going on. It's debate night, and everybody's going to want to get to the debate. So we'll start moving here. Coming up, we have an interview with Ed Martin. Ed Martin is running for Attorney General. And he stopped by earlier today to talk to us, and we have a recorded interview with that, and we'll play that in a little bit. And we also have some more information from Ray Cuneo, some great stuff about Agenda 21. And I'm telling you, every time I talk to this guy, I just, you know, my heart just kind of stops, because the information that he puts forth and the magnitude of what all of this can do to our country and our state, it stops my heart. It's frightening. So we'll talk to him. And like I said, we'll talk to Terry Herring. But for now, we'll take a real quick break, and then we'll get back here with Ed.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
And we're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition talk a lot about the issues. You know, we're very issues focused, but we want you to also remember that you need to get behind your candidates. The primary is over. We're not dealing with primaries anymore. And there's a lot of candidates out there who need the grassroots support of the grassroots communities to get them over the hump. And we sure would like to see some conservatives in office. And Ed Martin is one of those people whom I think can make a huge change in Jefferson City. He's running for Attorney General. And I had the chance to speak with him a little bit earlier today. You know, we need to get Koster out of office, folks. He's not going to help you with Obamacare. It's a mess. And Ed Martin promises to be aggressive on all of those fronts. So let's go to that conversation that we had with Ed a little bit earlier today. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. And we're fortunate enough today to have a visit from Ed Martin off the campaign trail.
So, Ed, thanks for being with us, and tell us what's going on the campaign trail.
Well, thank you, Lisa. It's, less than 40 days left. This campaign is starting to get really exciting. I think, you know, there's sort of twin things when you're running for office like this. You work so hard, you sometimes wonder if people are paying attention, and then all of a sudden you get to this point in the race and people start to really pay attention, and it's exciting, and you just want to get the message out and give people a choice. And, I think a lot of races are important in America, and a lot of races are important to Missourians, and I think people are starting to see that Attorney General is an important job, and that I think I'm the right guy for the job, so I'll turn their vote.
Yep. Ed Martin is running for Attorney General against Chris Koster, who has now been labeled Chris Koster the Imposter. And we, as I understand it, Ed, there's been some controversy over, you know, yet again, this kind of controversy seems to follow you. You cannot get your opponents to debate you. What is going on?
I guess I'm just so, I don't know what to say on that. I thought we'd do something different in this campaign. We've always seen these debates about debating, and there's all this sort of back and forth. And so right after the primary, I cleared my schedule for almost every Monday from about 2 o'clock in the afternoon until 5:30 or 6, and just said to local civic groups and student groups, if you'd like to, take a slot, and let's have a town hall, very unthreatening, not a debate that would scare off, you know, Chris Koster. We even said, let's just have it be both people get to speak for 10 or 15 minutes and then questions from the civic group. And so we did that, and we had a number of groups take us up on the offer. I was in Lawrence County Monday of this week, talking to folks there, doing one of these, and Chris Koster just doesn't show up. And I think there's something really wrong, and I admit that I come out of the sort of Tea Party movement in the sense that we do a lot of getting together, whether it's rallies, discussion groups, after parties, and I'm a believer that people that want to serve in elected office ought to get themselves front and center and take questions and have people look them in the eye. It's one thing to look the TV over when someone runs a 30-second ad. It's another to look them in the eye and say, what do you really stand for? So I'm disappointed that the Democrat incumbent Chris Koster isn't coming out, but I'm not surprised. I think he's, you know, his modus operandi, his MO is to sort of hide and run TV ads and then hopefully win. So we're hoping to change that, and that's why we're doing these sort of debate town halls and not having much success with getting him present, but having a good chance to meet the folks too.
But you're showing up and you're still getting the information out, right?
Yeah, exactly. And my campaign, as your listeners may know, I mean, if you go to edmartin4missouri.com, that's edmartin4missouri.com. I mean, my campaign is all about access of the public to the candidate. We do social media. We use video, emails. And if you want to know where I stand on an issue, I'm not going to shy away from it, whether it's a proposition or a proposed law or an idea. I want to learn about it. I want to tell you not only what I believe to be the right answer, but also how I got my principles and what I believe got me to that answer. And I think that's all a tryout for the job. I mean, you know, it's not enough anymore to say I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat, pick me. I think people deserve to say, what do you stand for? How do you get to the decision? How do you make the decision? How do you get to the point where you make a decision? And I think that's why I'm so committed to doing radio and TV and interviews and be present and then town halls, because I think people really want that, deserve it. And, gosh, we've got to get a different model of leadership in this state because things are really slipping, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, it's getting down to crunch time now, and the candidates are raising, you know, have raised money and are continuing to raise money. We will be seeing a lot of television ads out there for all the candidates, and you just released yesterday or Monday, I believe it was, a fantastic, very entertaining and very informative, yet informative television ad. And I did put it up at the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page. It's a great ad. But in that Ed, you outline as quickly as possible all of the very most important topics of your platform. You want to go over those real quick?
Yeah, well, first of all, it is really fun and exciting in our modern age to do these television ads, and I've enjoyed it. You know, our first ad of the whole campaign was for the primary. It was called Minute. We called it Minute because I said in the first minute in office, and I really mean minute, I'm going to have a new legal strategy to take on the various encumbersome aspects of Obamacare. But for this general election, you know, there's a part of it where you're introducing yourself to the public. And so in this ad, which we call Waste Not, I talk about how, you know, very quickly how my opponents got millions and millions of dollars from travelers, and I don't have that. I'm raising my money. I quickly say that, and then I say, hey, we got to run through some things. And whether it's standing up for constitutional rights like the Second Amendment or caring about families because I show my own family there or fighting Obamacare or making sure that I cut my own pay in office and recognize that we're supposed to be public servants, not, you know, publicly entitled elected officials and all. So it's exciting. I think it's definitely a different kind of ad. You know, Lisa, you and I were talking off the air about the creative side of that. The guy who helped me make that ad is a Missouri native who was born and raised in central Missouri over in Ashland, Missouri. Now lives in South Carolina. His name's Heath Thompson, and Heath is somewhat famous now for having been the guy who helped Marco Rubio in 2010 do his television and his media presence. So he's a real gifted guy, and I think I'm really flattered that he wanted to work with me, and we've been able to put up, I think, you know, as you said, an informative ad that also shows some of the energy and some of the authenticity, I hope, of who I am and my family, and makes the case, at least as an opening salvo, about Ed Martin as the candidate for Attorney General, and then hopefully we can continue that conversation and get people's votes.
Absolutely. Well, and it is. It's a very informative and an entertaining ad, and it's something that you remember when you watch it, and it's great. Okay, one subject I kind of want to touch on with you, you know, there's some controversy or some questions about Koster's claims of being tough on crime, and I know that you have a position on that. You want to talk about your position. I know you're going to go tough after Obamacare, and I know you're going to go tough after a lot of things. Let's talk about the crime issue.
Yeah, well, listen, first of all, people should be clear. The Attorney General is a very important office. It's a very important constitutional office for lots of reasons. But there's a part of it that the integrity of the office is at the center of what we as Americans and Missourians believe. And, you know, because we have to rely on our law, our legal system, to have integrity. It can't be a corrupt system when it's corrupt. It's not a system that works for us, for Americans. And so, you know, the starting point for me is that our current Attorney General, I just don't think he's serious about the integrity of the office. And so for me, when he says things like all prosecutor, no politics, it's kind of laughable. It's a guy that switched parties from Republican to Democrat just because he couldn't win a primary. And he, you know, anyone that knows his sort of how, who he is, he's a very political guy. And so it's more importantly, though, the most famous and egregious serial killer in Missouri history is a guy named Robinson. And Chris Koster agreed to a plea deal with this animal and let the guy live, first of all, not get the death penalty, but also let him kind of get away with not having to tell the families where the bodies of his victims. He admitted killing these women, but he didn't tell the prosecutor, Chris Koster, where the bodies were. So it's kind of one of these things where I think he hopes we don't look too closely, even as he says he's tough on crime. Now, I don't want to get in a contest that says who's going to do this or that. What I want to say is I believe that the shared values we have as Missourians mean that our Constitution, our federal and our state Constitution, and the rule of law matter, and it must be upheld. It's not my preference as to what should be the law or what should not. That's a policymaker's decision. Mine as Attorney General is to uphold the law. And when you see a guy like the Democrat Chris Koster sort of smoke and mirrors trying to hide what he's really up to, it makes you think this is not the guy that's going to honor the integrity of the law. And so I see crime and the problem of crime around us as a huge problem, and I think it's not being addressed, these sort of drama of these advertisements. When I'm Attorney General, I'm going to take the sheriffs, move the sheriffs into a position of power, because under our notion of sovereignty, it's our sheriffs that have more of a role, and our local prosecutors and law enforcement need to be empowered, not more centralized government, not more drama from the chief legal officer, but more of a chief legal leader. And I think we do have some leading that needs to be done, especially when it comes to protecting our rights, but especially when it comes to accurately assessing how the law binds us together and limits some things, but otherwise protects our liberty. And I think that's a big part of what we're missing.
Well, that'll be great coming for the Attorney General's office. We're fighting an issue here in St. Charles County about keeping the sheriff's department in place, you know, as opposed to letting it be another bureaucratically appointed position. So we'll look forward to that from you. So, okay, so we're wrapping up. We're, you know, in the final weeks of the campaign. How can people help you, Ed?
Yeah, well, we do need a lot of help. I would say it's very tough to take on an incumbent like I'm picking on. He's got the power of the office and all that. So I need people's help. First of all, I want to ask those people that are listening to learn more about me, and I want to earn their vote. You know, that's the most important thing that people have that they could help me with. After that, I do need people's prayers, first of all. I'm myself a Christian, and I believe that the power of prayer is something that can be very transformative, so that's important. And then people can volunteer, come down to our headquarters. Our headquarters is over near Valley Park and on 141 and 44. It's on our website, Ed Martin for Missouri. They can make phone calls. They can help us put out signs and bumper stickers. People can contribute. We need contributions. I'm raising my money for this campaign, $25 and $50 a time, and it makes a huge difference. When somebody gets you $25, you know you've got a not only someone who's just giving you that money, which is valuable enough, there's somebody that's buying into what you're doing and what you're about. So we need all that help. And if you go to edmartin4missouri.com, again, it's edmartin4missouri.com, and find out more. We'd love to, again, earn people's vote and have them be involved in our campaign.
Awesome. And go to your local campaign headquarters, folks, and pick up some flyers and some pushcards and walk them around your neighborhood, because the grassroots campaigning is the best kind of campaigning you can do for your candidates. Thank you so much for being with us, Ed. We hope you'll come back and keep us updated on your campaign.
Well, thanks to Ed Martin for stopping in today and giving us that interview. We're real happy that his campaign is going so well. And I can't stress enough, folks, that, you know, in true culture vigilante style, if you want your government to change, it's, you know, we really need to get involved and engaged. And we're the reason that we have the problems that we have now is because we've let things go for a long time, and we've let somebody else handle it, or we've been too busy to pay attention to what's going on. So if you have a few minutes to stop by your local campaign headquarters and pick up some brochures just to walk around your neighborhood, you know, just, you know, if you can't make a donation, and we know you're going to vote. And by the way, October 10th is the last day to register to vote, to be able to vote in the November election. So if you know somebody who's not registered to vote, go out and get a voter registration card, or get them to the library and get them registered to vote. Go out and talk to your neighbors, bring some put some push cards in some doors. You know, just take a few minutes of your time, and you would just you would be surprised at how helpful that will be to put somebody's campaign over the top. Okay, we're going to listen to the Grassroots Minute, and then we're going to come back and listen hear from Ray Cuneo.
This is the Grassroots Minute. On November 6th, St. Charles County voters will decide whether they want to keep their sheriff department intact with a sheriff elected by the people, or drastically diminish it and establish a countywide police department with a chief appointed by the county executive. It's simple, really, elected versus appointed. St. Charles County law enforcement should remain independent and headed by an elected sheriff who is directly accountable to citizens and not to the whims of an elected official. To see just how politics are injected into a county police department, you need to look no further than St. Louis County. From the beginnings of our country, independent county sheriffs have been established across the nation, and their sworn duty remains the same as those established over 200 years ago: to protect the rights, property, and civil liberties of the citizens living within the county. The overwhelming majority of the Sheriff's Department staff in St. Charles County are opposed to the creation of a county police department, as should the voters of St. Charles County. During a time when the rights to vote couldn't mean more to a citizen of this country, your county council, county executive, and your current sheriff want to take away your right to select a chief law enforcement officer of your community. If this occurs, the newly formed chief would only have to answer to the county executive and the county council, not the citizens that employ him. November 6th, vote no in county charter question law enforcement. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to the Culture Vigilante Hour on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Earlier this week, I was fortunate enough to get a hold of Ray Cuneo again. Ray is just a wealth of knowledge on the issue of Agenda 21. Agenda 21 is something that most people don't really know about or understand, but once they learn a little bit about it,
about it, it's like being hit in the face with a board. It's so overwhelming and so comprehensive and such a political chokehold on our government and our way of life here in America, and it's all coming at us through the United Nations. And Ray Cuneo has done just extended research on this. He's been involved in fighting this for years and years, and earlier this week I was able to talk to him about it, and he's got some more information for us on it. So let's take a listen.
Hello, this is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. And with us again this week, we have Ray Cuneo. Ray was with us last week, and he gave us a very good overview of what Agenda 21 is and how it is really infiltrated every aspect of our government and our lives, from a local to a state to a federal level, and just exactly what it means to Americans. And this week, Ray is going to expand a little bit more into detail on what goes on at the local level of Agenda 21. Thanks for being with us today, Ray.
That's great to be here again, Lisa. Thank you.
So, like I said, last week, I mean, it was just stunning. You know, the information was just kind of heart-stopping that you gave us last week. And, you know, a lot of people, Agenda 21 is a really difficult and complex concept for people to understand, but it really has permeated every aspect of our government and our society. And so today you're going to tell us a little bit about just exactly how it affects us more on a local level. What have you got for us?
Well, I'd kind of like to cover the primary methods of how this is being implemented across the United States, whether it is at the state level or at the local level, and then kind of focus in on one specific local method, that being planning and zoning. But just let me mention here first what I consider to be the seven primary methods of implementation that has been employed by the federal government down through their surrogates at the state level and on to the local level, which is going to be the final step. And we'll discuss these later on in more detail, but certainly today we're going to focus on the planning and zoning. But let me mention the seven real quickly. First of all, it's the federal agencies and their relationship with the state, their respective state agencies and local agencies, primarily their state agencies. Giving an example would be the federal agencies, EPA and Missouri DNR, for example. Another method would be, and of course, in those state agencies, there are memorandums of understandings and cooperative working agreements, which we'll discuss in more detail. Then, of course, I mentioned the master plan, or the proponents like to call it comprehensive planning. That's more of a local planning and zoning method of implementation. Then we have regional government or regional governance, which a lot of people have no idea that we operate under a regional government concept, although it's not a constitutional form of government. Another method is regional grant planning done by the USDA and USDOT and the Housing and Urban Development. A sixth one would be the International Green Building Codes. And last, but certainly not least, and it's not, these are just the primary ones, would be federal FEMA's hazard mitigation planning. So those, and we'll discuss all of these in more detail, but today I'd like to focus in on planning and zoning. Here in the state of Missouri, we call it master planning, not comprehensive planning, but just to give a broader perspective here, there are approximately 3,100 counties in the United States, and of course thousands of cities and towns across the nation. Of course, we have 50 states. Now, each one of these states generally have planning and zoning or statutes, a language and statute that authorizes planning and zoning for primarily cities and counties with high density. Primarily all cities and those counties with high density. And, of course, planning and zoning is an ideal mechanism or venue for implementing sustainable development and sustainable communities. And the thing is that a lot of people don't realize that planning and zoning is a self-imposed restrictions on your property rights.
and people need to think about that a little bit. It is a self-imposed restriction on your property rights. The vast majority of people across this country live in, under a planning and zoning ordinance of some type. Again, that's mostly in the urban areas. And the reason they like to implement these provisions through planning and zoning is that people are already conditioned to government restrictions and control. So it's much easier to bring in and ease in these sustainable development policy and provisions and into an area where people are already indoctrinated into accepting planning and zoning. And of course, it's easier then for people to accept the fact that, well, it's sustainable development is just another planning and zoning, so we have to go along with it. In Missouri, all counties, all cities, and a lot of counties that have planning and zoning are required to have what they call a master plan. This is required in statute, state statute, to support their local ordinances and regulations. And a master plan is nothing more than a document that gives an overview. It's an aspirational document that that sets the tone for your city or your county, how you want to manage the land use, the resource use, the transportation network, et cetera, et cetera. All of those things have a dramatic impact on how people live their lives. A lot of people don't realize that, and they just willingly accept that, well, government says we got to do this, so we do it. But land use, resource use, the environmental issues, and transportation have a dramatic impact on how and where you live. I have firsthand experience with how Agenda 21 Sustainable Development is being implemented because I have set, I think I mentioned this in our other segment, I've been a planning and zoning commissioner in Franklin County, which is part of East-West Gateway Regional Government. We set up right west of the border of St. Louis County on the west. We're 922 square miles. We have about 101,000 population. I've been planning and zoning commissioner for 16, going on 17 years. So I've had an opportunity to see how planning and zoning has been confronted with some of this Agenda 21 business. Back about 4 years ago, our county commissioners issued a directive to the planning and zoning. Now, this is in Franklin County. To implement, or I should say, update our master plan, and which was fine. It had been about 10 years since we did. But I will tell you, having had knowledge of Agenda 21 since 1994, I fully anticipated, I cringed because I knew in my heart what we were going to be confronted with. And, of course, my worst nightmares came to pass because in the process that we started, actually it was about 3 years ago, the county commissioners authorized hiring a consultant to help our planners, planning staff, to develop a new draft plan, which planners and sustainable development people like to call comprehensive plans. But at any rate, it's a new draft plan, master plan. So, sure enough, a long, long story short, the consultant came forward with a 20-page document that our county paid $30,000 for. And I, with my knowledge of Agenda 21 Sustainable Development, I could have probably taken a week and put it together myself, or maybe even less. And the reason I say that, it was pretty much copied straight out of the federal smart growth documents and guidelines, which is the basis for implementing Agenda 21 Sustainable Development across the United States. But the good news is that I was able to educate enough of my fellow committee members on planning and zoning and the steering committee that after a very arduous and heated discussions for 4 months, we finally voted not to accept it, and we dropped back and picked up on our old plan and just worked from that.
So, Ray,
long story.
Let's get into the details of a little bit about what this what does this look like for folks? What's involved? What when they see this in their own communities, what do they see?
Well, that's exactly what I had on ahead next here. What was in our plan? Now, remember, this is a land use document, resource document, transportation document. What it would require is mandatory conservation easements along all public and private waterways in the county. That is rivers, creeks, ponds, streams, anything like that. I won't go into what a conservation easement is, but it is basically a way for government to steal part of your property because it is a splitting of title to your property. It also would require, and I'm talking about the draft plan, a mandatory scenic byways along our major corridors in the county, in throughout the county, as well as vistic overlays. Now, again, discussion of scenic byways, and I've done a lot of programs where it takes the whole program just to talk about the implications and where it comes from on scenic byways. But basically, it requires a special planning and zoning overlay district whereby, let's just suppose, give an example, Interstate 44 runs through Franklin County, or Highway 50 or Highway 100. And if you had a scenic byway there, anything that is within sight of that highway, that are, if you're on the highway, and anything that you can see from the highway, the county, if they had this, would be able to say, okay, not only is this zoned agriculture, for example, and you have limited things you can do because of that zoning, but you also have a scenic overlay, vista overlay, or a scenic byway provision here, and you can't cut any trees, you can't disturb any old barns that may be historical in nature, and would have give you a Norman Rockwell experience if you drove by, or you couldn't, as I said, cut any trees because it may interfere with the viewing fall foliage, or you couldn't build a new building because it may obstruct the view of people driving up and down the highway. So it's a very onerous restriction. It basically is taking complete control on inverse condemnation or regulation.
It makes the federal government king of over all they survey off that scenic highway, over and above what the community can do
right.
to it.
Well, and see, you bring up a good point here, and this is how seductive and how sneaky the federal government is in implementing this. They do not come in and say, you must do this. They have various devious methods of getting this implemented into government regulations through enabling ordinances and what have you. And that's what I'd like to touch on next, is that some of the players involved and how this gets into. Well, first of all, let me finish up. I just happened to think here. To finish up on developments, if you were putting in a new housing development, they would require maybe as much as a 60% set-aside. If you had a 20-acre development, you may have to set aside 10 or 12 acres in open space. And a lot of people say, well, that might be good. Well, the problem is you're not going to get anybody, any developer in the right mind that's going to come out there and say, look, I can pencil this out and make it work. Because if he goes to his banker and says, I need $2 million to get this off the ground, the banker takes a look at it and says, wait a minute, you think I'm going to put $2 million in it when the government, when the local government says you can't use 60% of this property, it's set aside, meaning that, Mr. Developer, if you fail, I'm going to be sitting here with a piece of property that I can't do anything with, or at least 60% of it. So that's another one. Then that mandatory biking trails through all of the screens and highways throughout the county. Again, that is would get involved in taking private property. And this is one that really catches people by surprise, is protection of the nighttime sky. That was in our proposed draft plan, protection of the nighttime sky.
Okay.
Meaning that meaning that they don't want too much lighting any place so that people can enjoy on a crisp, clear night the skies. Now, okay, how does this stuff work its way into local government? It works its way in, as I said, it comes in primarily, we're talking about planning and zoning in the master plan. Well, you have a variety of players involved. First of all, as I already mentioned, you have the consultants. The consulting industry throughout the United States that have anything to do with consulting government at any level, primarily local or even state, has been fully indoctrinated over the past 20 years into the provisions of Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. They've gotten tremendous amounts of need to do this. In fact, some of the primary non-government that consultants that are out there doing this, along with the NGOs, the NGOs primarily are the American Planning Association, Local Government for Sustainability, let's see, the Renaissance Group, Institute for Sustainable, and others. When you look at those groups, and Franklin County is a member of the American Planning Association, and we get all their literature and everything. So these major NGOs, at least over the last 20 years, have gotten as much as $100 million, directly or indirectly, from the federal government to develop language software for state and local government with language already written for enabling our state statute legislation. It's already hand-delivered and to local government a lot of times directly or through the consultants that come in to do the consulting. Now, if that's not bad enough, is that over the last 20 years, the major universities throughout the United States have been turning out young people that have majored in urban planning, and they have been turned out with master's degree in urban planning. I can guarantee you they're fully indoctrinated at the university level in implementing all these provisions. They think they're going to save the world, save the community, and of course, those same people get hired by county or city government. And, of course, when they're hired and in those positions and they're working with a consultant hired like we hired here in Franklin County, or they're working in association with one of the NGOs like the American Planning Association, all of this stuff gets put in language and developed and puts in a draft form and put in front of the Planning and Zoning Commission. And unless you have somebody that's sitting on the Planning and Zoning Commission that knows where this comes from and what's behind it and how onerous this can be and what impact it can have on the lifestyles of people throughout the city or the community and the county, chances are, and I know how it works because it'll get condensed, it'll get put in front of you as a commissioner at 9 o'clock at night after you went through your normal meeting night, and staff will give you a summary of it and say, here, we need to pass this and get on with it. And that's a sure. Yes. Now, when planning and zoning gets it, then it goes to the county commissioners, the final step, or to the city mayor or to the city council, which is the final step in passing this stuff. And, of course, the county commissioners or the mayor and councilman look at this and say, well, gee whiz, it's been vetted through the planning and zoning. We have all these smart planners. We paid big bucks for the consultants. We are members of the American Planning Association or the local governments for sustainability. And gee whiz, okay, this is a done deal. So they read it over and find it and say, hey, we got all these people. They may ask a few questions. That's how.
Yeah, and there's never anybody to give the other side of the story or to present the other issue. Now, I have a question for you, Ray, because I know a little bit about this, but nowhere near as much as I should or as much as you do. Okay, so when you have the federal government pushing this large agenda to kind of preserve and protect the larger lands, to not develop, then correct me if I'm wrong, but I've seen some
On the internet, I've seen some logistical maps about what this makes the nation look like then. Then you have very, very concentrated areas where people can live. So what it makes is you have these very high-density living areas that are concentrated, and then you have these very wide-open spaces that are not
right.
concentrated because they are controlled by the federal government. Yes?
Yes. The idea behind it is to shove them in and stack them up, and I'm talking about people, over the long period of decades. And as I said in our other segment, government thinks decades ahead. The idea is to adopt policy or promote policy down by the federal government, down to the state and our local government to shove people in, stop that nasty urban sprawl.
Because you can control people easier when they're in one space.
Yeah, well, I mean, the idea is, like, let's just take the state of Missouri, is to shove people into St. Louis in Kansas City, stop it in Franklin County, stop all development, do everything you can to throw roadblocks in front of it and push people backwards. Don't let the free market have any say in it. Don't let people have a choice. Adopt these policies and create provisions for shoving people back in. Now, you mentioned, and we'll get into this later, the map of the United States. Absolutely, there's a map of the United States. It's been put together by Dr. Michael Coughlin. It's called the Wildlands Project Map. Now, major cities like Kansas City, Springfield, St. Louis are not going to be part of the Wildlands. But I will tell you, the goal is eventually, over the next decades or 50 years, is to avoid people being in any of the rural areas, major rural areas of the United States. And, of course, we'll talk later about how this has happened in years past in the western part of the United States, primarily west of the 100th Meridian, where the federal government probably owns 75% of the lands out here. And, of course, if you are an inholder, a private property inholder in there, they're doing everything they can to run you out of there. And there's a whole variety of things we can talk about how they do that. But, yes, the idea is to put people into concentrated, high-density areas over a period of time. And when we talk about the federal grant planning, regional planning, we'll show what their definition of livability is and how they define livability in terms of transportation and where to work and where to recreate and all of those things.
Okay, that might be a really great place for us to pick up next time. We're running out of time. People can go to the UN website. Is that right, Ray? Because this is all laid out on the UN website. It's, you know, they're not trying to hide it. It's all out there. The whole shooting match for Agenda 21 is there. Is there any place else we can go before next week to learn a little bit more?
There's a whole lot of pro-Agenda 21. If you go on any of the federal websites or any of the state websites or any of the major environmental groups, Sierra Club and Nature, they're going to be promoting Agenda 21.
Yeah.
Yes, but as far as Agenda 21 at the UN, yes, you can go on their website. They have it there. Also, again, there's a couple of websites that I mentioned before was sovereignty.net, I believe, and that's Henry Lamb. He had passed away a few months back. I believe his website is still up, though. And he is that the Agenda 21 document, all 40 chapters, 300 pages is there. And then, of course, another good source and a guy who is really out there beating the drums and have been for a good number of years, a fellow I know well, is Tom DeWeese. And that is the his website, AmericanPolicyCenter.org.
Okay, very good. We're going to have Ray back next week, and we're going to continue to learn about this ridiculous, intrusive, oppressive situation that's going on right under our noses, and we don't even know it. Thank you for being with us today, Ray. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Lisa.
Talk to you next
Bye.
Week. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children.
This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
Oh my gosh. Yes, she's back. We're here. And in case you've missed it, in case you haven't heard the reoccurring theme of the last few shows, we are fighting an issue here in St. Charles County about being able to maintain our rights as citizens to elect our sheriff. Folks, this is happening in St. Charles County today during this election cycle, but this could be happening in your county tomorrow during the next election, because this is a national trend. They're trying to pick off these sheriff's departments and institute broader and larger bureaucracies all across the country and appoint police chiefs and take away your right to vote on these issues. So we're dealing with St. Charles County in November. You know, we could be doing this in your county next time. So if you have an issue anywhere in Missouri, anything, any of these crazy wild ballot issues that are going on in your area, and you want to promote that and you want to get the word out to everybody in your county and across the state, because we need to know about these things that are going on in Missouri across the state. It helps you to build your grassroots movement to fight these issues. Contact us here at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. We are a clearinghouse for grassroots organizations, and we will be one voice standing strong with you to help you in your fight to maintain the freedom and liberty in your community. We once again have with us Terry Herring, helping us to work on this Save Our Sheriff Department campaign. And Terry, I spoke with Terry earlier this morning on some issues that we're starting to develop some action items and some things that we can do to help get the word out and help make people aware of what's going on in St. Charles County regarding this issue. So let's take a listen to Terry.
Okay, we're back, and this is Lisa Payne Nager with Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. And as you know, over the last few weeks, we've been following very closely this issue in St. Charles County with the Save Our Sheriff campaign. The county council and the county executive and the present sheriff are trying to introduce a ballot initiative that will be on the ballot in November to have the county executive appoint a police chief, and thus taking away the ability of the citizens of St. Charles County to vote and elect their sheriff and their sheriff's department. And there are a lot of things wrong with this for a number of reasons, and we have Terry Herring with us again this week of Missouri Patriots Forum to help us explain some of those issues and to talk about some of the action items that folks can do to get the word out about this situation to help people vote the right way in November. Thanks for being with me today, Terry.
Hi, Lisa. Great to be with you again. Thank you.
Okay, so Terry, we kind of have been outlining the issues of the last few weeks about why this is a bad deal for the folks in St. Charles County. Well, and you're going to be at the St. Charles County Pachyderms on this Friday. So if anybody wants to come and hear about that, please feel free to come. We meet at 12 noon at the Golden Corral Restaurant on Zumbel Road. And Dave Spence will also be there, so that'll be a great opportunity for you to see him. But Terry's going to be there to explain to the people there a little bit about some of the issues that we've already discussed and to try to inform the folks about why this is a bad situation for St. Charles County. So, Terry, in your mind, what's the number one thing here that people need to know?
Well, the number one thing, Lisa, as I see it, is a rush to urgency. You know, when I was a young lad and I began to discover the opposite sex, my mother always would repeat to me from time to time, marry in haste and repent at leisure. And I think what we're doing here is a variation of that. We're trying to implement in haste, and we'll have time perhaps at our leisure to repent of an ill-informed action. I've been in leadership and management positions at large operations in my own practice for, let's be kind, over 40 years. I have yet to see a savings generated by the creation of another agency from an already establishing one where the previous agency is not, you know, totally eliminated or reduced. Savings, efficiencies come from reductions, not from additional growth, and that is how I see this. And to keep this kind of neat and compact and focused on costs, what I have put together and what I'm going to use on Friday at the Pachyderms is just a series of questions that I would like to ask in person of our sheriff. And tying it strictly to cost, another agency is being created from an existing agency. What savings are to be achieved from this action? Nothing has been documented to show any savings whatsoever. How can an additional agency be created without the concurrent duplication of some certain functions? I don't know how that can happen. And so now that we have two separate agencies, where are the facilities going to be, and what is it going to cost the people of St. Charles County to establish facilities for both the Sheriff's Department and for this proposed new County Police Department? The Sheriff's Department right now is in the civil process and courts function are in two different locations. Are we going to move the remnants of the Sheriff's Department after the establishment of the County Police all into the same location with the courts function? Can't do it. There is no room. So where are we looking for a facility?
Are we going to build a new one with taxpayer money?
Well, money is the root of all evils, and this is one of those roots. There have been no formal cost-benefit analysis. The other question that I have, because I've been cogitating on this, is the County Police Department is only to have authority over the unincorporated areas unless it enters into contracts with the municipalities approved by the County Council. Okay, the municipalities already have support from the Sheriff's Office as needed because the Sheriff's Office covers the county with primary responsibility in the unincorporated areas, but they do have assistance ability already in place. Now, say a municipality sees no need to engage in a contract with the new County Police Department. Are the taxpayers of St. Charles County, particularly those who are residents of municipalities, O'Fallon, St. Charles, St. Peter's, Wentzville, and so forth, are they going to continue to pay taxes to support the remnants of the Sheriff's Department, the County Police Department, and their municipalities, even though they may not receive any police and protection services from the County Police Department?
Yeah, so clearly, Terry, I mean, there are so many questions left unanswered by this, and this has clearly been ramrodded through the County Council in lightning speed fashion, which should always raise a red flag to any taxpayer or anybody looking at these issues, just to get this on the November ballot. Without having done the due diligence and all of the research to be able to provide the taxpayers and the voters with the answers that they need to legitimately vote on this with some intelligence. This is just a ridiculous situation.
Well, Lisa, let's just cut to the chase. And I reflect on that great paragon of congressional wisdom and elegance Nancy Pelosi, who told us not too long ago that we have to pass this so you'll know what's in it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what this situation is, because they've absolutely not given us any information on it.
No.
Nothing of substance. Okay, so now we're at the point where we need to inform and educate the folks, and some folks from the Sheriff's Department have organized a website, and there's a campaign so that we can help people understand what's truly going on. If you go to, let me pull the website up here, if you go to SaveOurSheriffDepartment.com, that's DEPT.com, there's a tab on that page where you can take action. And they have some information on there on a couple of things that we can do. First of all, they have initiated a letter writing campaign. So there's plenty of information to get the facts on the web page. What we really need folks to do is, because this is a grassroots effort, there's not a lot of money involved, we need the grassroots to spread the word, go to the web page and educate yourself on the issues, and then go to the take action page, and all of the information that you need there to contact every member of the county council, the county executive, and the sheriff is there. There's a draft letter there that you can copy and paste, or you can write one of your own to send them your thoughts exactly on this issue. And in addition to that, there are web links to all of the patches in St. Charles County, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and the St. Charles Suburban Journals. So we're gonna ask all of the folks out there to go to this web page at SaveOurSheriffDepartment.com, go to the Take Action tab, and make your voices heard, because the best way we can use this media, the best way we can to educate the folks. Have you got any thoughts on that, Terry?
Well, those are excellent ideas. I think a letter-writing campaign, particularly to the press like the Suburban Journals, because those give us good coverage in the county. There is a sound-off column in there, and I believe that has already been receiving some letters. It can always use more. I heard it's a very hungry column. There are also 20,000 door hangers that have been ordered and received by the committee, and folks could spend just maybe an hour or so in their own neighborhoods just hanging the door hangers on doors with the information about this initiative and why it's bad for the county. And also, as a way of supporting the process, the Save Our Sheriff's Department group does have bumper stickers for the piddly price of $1 that can be displayed on your vehicle, on your T-shirts. I won't go any farther than that. But I think the more we get the word out, and the more we ask questions, Lisa, the thing that concerns me as much as anything is that if you can't stand the answer, don't ask the question. And I think the answers that we'll get, we can't stand, but we do need to ask the question so we can really begin to see what is potentially going to impact us both, I would say, in countywide police protection and services that I think our sheriff's department already does a fine job of, and also in this time of great budget awareness, what's happening to our tax structure and our pocketbooks.
Yeah.
This is very, very serious, and we just cannot continue to waste taxpayers' money as we have in the past.
Yeah, and we also want to make the point, we really appreciate the support from people in surrounding counties as well, because this is not only an issue that affects St. Charles County. This is a national trend for they're picking off sheriff's departments all across the country and bloating bureaucracy and taking the ability for people to away from them to be able to vote their sheriffs in place. So, it's happening here in St. Charles County. You'll be seeing it happen someplace near you very soon, I'm sure, if they're successful here. So we really appreciate the support that we're getting from the folks in surrounding counties. And also want to make you aware of that we're going to be out. Look for us at various locations in St. Charles County on the weekends. We're going to be having sine waves to try to help bring some attention to this issue for folks that are not aware of it. We'll have three consecutive weekends, and that information will also be on the website as details. Jill will be telling you about that as well. So
this is our chance to move quickly and I'd say protect the members, residents of the county from what I consider to be a poorly constructed and improperly prepared package.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to comment on the motives of those who have proposed it, but I would say unless and until we can get serious, no-nonsense answers to the questions that we are raising, the only viable vote that we have is no on this issue. And the point that you made about trying to pick off sheriff's departments, I think is one we have to watch very carefully because, again, we're taking one more vote away from the people, and if we continue to see this pattern, we'll be basically ruled by bureaucracy and have very little direct input anymore on what is this? Governments derive their powers from the consent of the governed. We're losing our ability to provide our consent or our dissent.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better. Thank you, Terry, for being with us this week, and we'll talk to you as next week and as other things develop. We appreciate your efforts in this initiative. Thanks.
Thanks, Lisa.
Okay, talk to you soon.